This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Testing limits at the border. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
Border Patrol agents used to deport adults traveling alone looking for work. Now they're managing entire families seeking asylum. Hear how unprepared they are.
Two factors about today's red-hot job market that have largely gone overlooked.
One of the most popular giveaways to football players at this year's bowl games is one that some have received 4 years in a row.
And the best holiday carrot cake very well may come from a notorious prison.
Food is important to all of us, and it's very special for holidays, and it's this big part of relationships. But in jail, it's like one thing that sort of reminds you of the outside world and memories of the outside world, and it's sort of something you can still enjoy when there's a lot of things you're not enjoying in your life.
Wall Street Journal reporter Corinne Ramey on the carrot cake that inmates prepare at Rikers Island in New York. That report is later in the hour. The same remote desert border crossing used by a 7-year-old girl and an 8-year-old boy, both from Guatemala, who recently died in government custody in separate incidents, is seeing a surge in families and children that the Border Patrol is unequipped to handle. It's part of a problem current and former Border Patrol agents say has been growing for years. An agency designed to deter and deport adults traveling alone to find work now spends most of its time dealing with vulnerable families who want asylum. It's a story by Wall Street Journal immigration reporter Alicia Caldwell. Alicia, what have you seen during your numerous visits?
Well, basically you have, you know, over 100,000 people traveling as families who have come across the Mexican border, crossing illegally in the last year. The numbers continue to surge, and Border Patrol stations and Border Patrol itself just isn't necessarily equipped to handle this. Border Patrol agents have a very specific job: see somebody cross the border or find them after they've crossed the border, stop them, arrest them, process them. Now what you have is people, instead of trying to sneak across and be surreptitious, they are coming in full sight of Border Patrol agents and walking right up to them. In the case of a group of 163 people last week, or earlier this month, rather, in rural New Mexico, they walked around a port of entry in a place called Antelope Wells, and walked right up to a Border Patrol outpost. It's a forward operating base, and turned themselves in. There was no running or hiding. Mm. It was, hey, we're here. We'd like to ask for refuge or asylum in the U.S. And they're getting more and more of that, the sort of cross and surrender phenomenon. And Border Patrol stations are just not equipped for kids, mostly. They're built for single adults. They were built mostly with the intention of people being detained for a couple of hours at most, and by and large returned to Mexico. But you don't have Mexican migrants in the numbers that you did anymore. The overwhelming majority now are families and folks from Central America.
Boy, what struck me too was a comment from the chief of U.S. Border Patrol who said, our border security mission basically is now a humanitarian mission.
Right. You know, again, you've got groups of 100 plus. That becomes humanitarian in her view, because now you've got to make sure that these kids have food and water. You have to stock your patrol stations with diapers. That's not something that had been done before.
Yeah.
As I've visited stations, you know, across the border from San Diego to Brownsville, that's what struck me most is there's a lot of diapers and a lot of formula and juice boxes, not things that I had seen in my previous iterations as a reporter covering the Mexican border.
Wait, what else is, what other adjustments are being made?
Well, they're having to drive people, in some cases, hours away from the border to get them either with ICE or to drop them off at bus stations as after they've been released. In the case of Yuma, Arizona, there's not a bus station. There's a bus stop with a bench, but buses passing through Yuma are coming from someplace on their way to someplace else and this is not a major stop. So the Border Patrol has to drive these folks to Phoenix to make sure that they're not stuck in Yuma hoping for a spot on a bus. So they're spending hours driving back and forth. It's about a 200-mile drive each way from Yuma to Phoenix. That's a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of energy spent making sure these folks get to, you know, a more palatable place for them to continue on with their trip after they've been processed by immigration authorities.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal immigration reporter Alicia Caldwell. Her piece is called Surge of Migrant Families Tests Border Patrol. Is there relief in sight?
That's a good question. It's unclear. You know, the Commissioner of Customs and Border Protection, which oversees the Border Patrol, said they were surging agents and resources down to New Mexico, to Antelope Wells, where hundreds of people have been turning themselves in, as I said. But that place on the border, and it's just that, it's just a place. There's nothing around it, no infrastructure or resources. That's 90 miles from the nearest Border Patrol station, which is also in a fairly remote place in Lordsburg, New Mexico. So what they're trying to do is surge resources from within their own agency. They'll look at other agencies to see if there's other help. They've not ruled out Department of Defense assistance, though that has also not been requested as yet. As your listeners know, there's a variety of troops on the border right now, both National Guard and active duty, doing mostly behind-the-scenes technical work, you know, manning cameras or setting up perimeter fences and so on. So there's some question about whether or not to reallocate some of those requests and have those folks help out with the surge of families as well.
Boy, is this tied into the spending measure that's being bandied about on Capitol Hill?
Not so far, though. You know, officials from the Department of Homeland Security have said multiple times they need more resources, they need more manpower and money. It's interesting because, you know, the volume of people crossing the border illegally right now is still far lower than it was at the peak in 2000 when 1.6 million people were apprehended, but it's a much different population. As I said, it's no longer adults traveling on their own, primarily from Mexico. Now it's families. It's last month it was 59% families and unaccompanied kids. That's a pretty dramatic change from the single adult that can be housed all together.
Thanks, Alicia. Wall Street Journal immigration reporter Alicia Caldwell. To finish her thought there, as she mentioned, last month nearly 59% of people arrested at the border were families or unaccompanied children. Just 6 years ago, nearly 90% were single adults, primarily from Mexico. Americans have gotten heavier and thicker in the 21st century, with the numbers on the scale going up for men and women of all ages. That's according to a new federal report released by the National Center for Health Statistics. And why that may be disappointing news, the more alarming news is what these numbers are doing to our overall health. We're joined now by Jane O'Donnell, healthcare policy reporter at USA Today. Jane, what's up here?
Well, as almost anybody would have guessed, we are getting bigger, and our waistlines, for women in particular, grew more than 2 inches between 1999 and 2016, and men's grew about 1 inch, a little over 1 inch. The average weight grew a fair amount, about 10 pounds, and men, middle-aged men, shrunk by half an inch.
This, I guess, is tied to our sedentary lifestyle, right? Is there anything else, and we just haven't made the adjustments?
Well, it's our sedentary lifestyle. I'm not a doctor, but what I'm hearing from a lot of people, and I quoted three people in the story, and I know lots of other people, and I think we all do, that a lot of stress eating. You know, it's been well documented now. There's more people are describing being anxious. The stress is so high. Workforces are being cut. Jobs are being, people are working two jobs.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more stress eating. When you think about addictions, I hear from people, I've done a lot on opioids and alcohol recently, but you know, I know a lot of people that aren't addicted to any of those, but they're eating a bag, literally like a bag of M&Ms at night, like they just sit and eat like that, and then hate themselves in the morning, so
right.
It does sound a little bit like addiction.
Jeez. And I think what's so stunning here, too, is that, you know, we can all say, yep, we're bigger, thicker, we're heavier, and all that other stuff, but the trickle-down in terms of the health aspects here are just startling.
Yeah, when you think about the healthcare costs, I did a story about a year and a half ago where obesity was approaching tobacco when it comes to the association with cancer, the risk to the cancer-causing elements. So you've got, you know, cancer costs, heart disease, so many other diseases are caused by obesity. And, you know, there's, of course, the healthy food is more available. I mean, where I live, there's a million places to get a salad, but you go to certain parts of Washington, D.C., which I live near to, and, you know, everything is fried food. Yeah. And so people, you know, it's much easier to get a dollar hamburger than it is to buy a salad, much cheaper.
Jeez. We're speaking with Jane O'Donnell, healthcare policy reporter at USA Today. She's written a piece entitled, If You Think Americans Are Getting Fatter. Well, guess what? You're right. They are. We are. It's a new study. How about awareness? I mean, are we more aware that this is the case and we're still not addressing it?
Yeah, I think we're more aware of it, but we're just getting used to it. You know, a lot of women's sizes are now bigger. I mean, so as I get older, I may have put on a few pounds, but I'm also wearing a smaller size. They're trying to make us feel better about our size. But it is kind of amazing because there's so much publicity about the benefits of exercise. I did a piece a few months ago on the fitness guidelines. You know, so few of us are meeting the fitness guidelines, and people just don't. I personally made it. I walk an hour in the morning, and I'm trying to do an unlimited Pilates membership and trying to go like 3, 4, 5 times a week.
Wow.
But a lot of people don't do that. Yeah. I mean, they don't realize that there's a mental health benefit, too. I literally feel better if I'm walking my dog in the woods than if I didn't.
Thanks, Jane. Jane O'Donnell, healthcare policy reporter at USA Today. Quite a year at the box office. Hit films generated a disproportionate share of an estimated $12 billion in domestic sales. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
It was a record year for Hollywood, for the box office overall, and for Disney in particular. Eric Schwartzel of the Wall Street Journal recaps the year in movies and joins us now. Eric, how did Disney do so well?
Well, this has really been a strategy years in the making at Disney. You know, they focus on fewer films than the other major studios, but they really hone in on those big brands that everyone knows, like Star Wars or Marvel or Pixar. They really have this stable of brands that allow them to make every movie an event movie. And this year, they had three movies, Black Panther.
I waited my entire life for this. The world's gonna start over. I'm gonna burn it all.
The latest Avengers.
If he gets all the Infinity Stones, he can do it with the snap of his fingers. Just like that.
Tell me his name again.
Thanos.
And The Incredibles 2.
Superheroes are illegal.
We want to fight bad guys.
I am the bad guy.
It defines who I am.
We're not saying you have... What?
Someone on TV said it.
Which were the three highest grossing movies of the year, and together accounted for nearly $2 billion in domestic grosses.
Did Disney exceed expectation, or did those individual movies exceed people's expectations?
We always knew they were going to be huge. I think certainly The Incredibles 2 and Black Panther overperformed. I mean, Black Panther hit $700 million, which I don't think anyone saw coming. I mean, everyone thought it was going to be a well-performing movie, but hitting $700 million, I think it's now the third highest grossing movie of all time in the U.S. I mean, that is a phenomenon that I don't think is easy to predict.
Eric, it was interesting in your story, you talk about the big releases. They all used to be jammed up around Memorial Day or Christmas, and that led to fewer people being able to see things or spreading them out, and that seems to be working.
Absolutely. This has been a frustration of theater owners all the time because they say, you know, really what's driving people to the theater is not necessarily the holiday, but whether or not the movie's any good. And this year we saw a number of performers in these more untraditional times of year, right? Like, so Black Panther was released in February. Around October, you had this real cluster of hits like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Imagine thousands of people doing this in unison. Huh? Well, what's the lyric?
We will rock you. And A Star Is Born.
I don't sing my own songs.
Why?
I just don't feel comfortable.
Why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Well, because, like, almost every single person that I've come in contact with in the music industry has told me that my nose is too big and that I won't make it.
Your nose is beautiful.
These are times of year that, you know, maybe 10 or 15 years ago, you'd say, like, oh, you know, there's nothing showing, right? Like, because either it's football season or people are back in school. You know, it's not a time of year to go to the movies. But what we're seeing now is that it seems like every weekend is in play.
Street Journal. Eric, what are some of the biggest bombs this year?
Oh, they were big, too. There was this movie, Mortal Engines, that came out that was produced by Peter Jackson. It's still in, I think, some theaters, maybe out there, maybe a couple now at this point. It cost about $100 million to make and only grossed about $12. Disney is fallible. I think some rival studios would be quick to point out that they too, have some bombs. They released a movie that was an adaptation of The Nutcracker that didn't hit at all. And what's interesting about these are just how badly movies can perform these days. You know,
it's Wall Street Journal entertainment reporter Eric Schwartzel with this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Listen to us anytime on TuneIn at This Morning, America's First News with Gordon Deal, and on Stitcher at This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us on this final weekend of 2018. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka coming up this half hour. The main reason Americans are so stressed out these days. Also, the prison serving the best holiday carrot cake, and 'tis the season for re-bowl gifting. Clever Wall Street Journal story. We'll have it in about 20 minutes. It's time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org. For more than a year, the U.S. jobless rate has hovered right around 4%, including the last 3 months, when it's been a mind-boggling 3.7%, a half-century low. Fast-growing companies desperate for workers have turned to accepting candidates with lesser skills, drug use, and felony records, mostly ignoring long-held hiring red flags. Steve Levine, future editor at Axios, has a deeper dive on the little-discussed spillover effects. Steve, go through this.
This is something that is so interesting that I don't know why people are not talking about it, but we've got a huge number of people. Millions of Americans have been unemployed a very long time, 12 months or more, and this falls under a category. It's the labor participation rate, and there are people who are totally dismayed, depressed, and they just don't go to look for work, so they're not included in the unemployment figure, the official figure. But the job market is so hot, and it's been hot 4% or less for more than a year, that it's starting to erode that, those people. It's pulling those people in. So what we mean is that hundreds of thousands of them have now been pulled into the job market. So you get two aggregate effects. One is that because so many of them have been pulled in over this period, the whole workforce is trained at a higher level. And the second good thing, again, the aggregate, is because they're better trained, they can earn more. And that means that the GDP per person can rise too.
Boy, I'm thinking about this as you're saying it. So right, these are some people now who've been on the sidelines for some time, who have a giant resume gap in some cases, outdated skills, diminished experience, and now all of a sudden they take a job and they're starting to improve the resume significantly.
Right. So it hits from that side. Suddenly they're trained to do something. We don't know what that is. But it's better, you know, training is better than no training. Mm. And then the other thing is their attitude improves.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
You know, the worst thing that can happen, one of the worst things that can happen is to be out of work for a very long time. And here now they're not.
Well, we're speaking with Steve Levine, future editor at Axios. He's written a piece entitled "Low Joblessness is Lifting All Boats." One of the other things that jumped out too is this 3.5% jobless rate for those with only a high school diploma.
Yeah. So in a number of categories, you're getting these very impressive figures. So in this case, the category of worker who has no college education at all, only a high school degree, they have suffered the most in terms of stuck wages and just being out of work, not being able to find work. And here you've got that category specifically is lower than the average rate for the labor force as a whole, and their wages are growing the fastest of any category in the whole labor force. Just to add one other thing in there, the unemployment rate for black workers is lower than it's been since 1972, which is when they started to track that figure. It could even go further back than that.
You pointed out, too, one of the industry's biggest gripes has been a shortage of skilled workers. Has that necessarily changed?
At this point, we still have those gripes. And I don't see that going away soon. But what you can say is that if they get into a position, which they will, to be poaching workers from other companies, who are they poaching? They're poaching people in many cases who were jobless before and now are now have training, and you know they're in the mix.
Thanks, Steve. Steve Levine, future editor at Axios. Year after year, in survey after survey, money rises to the top as the number one reason Americans are stressed out. A look at the latest survey to see how pervasive the money stress is from Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. Katie, explain.
Money. I mean, this is according to a million surveys. Money is the biggest source of stress. The newest one shows that it was the, this is from Northwestern Mutual, shows that money was the dominant source of stress for 44% of Americans. That was followed by 25% who said personal relationships. So, you know, even though it's the holidays and you and your mom are, you know, going at each other's throats, still money is way more stressful than personal relationships, and just 18% said work. The American Psychological Association, same thing. Money has been their number one stressor for like more than a decade at this point. I mean, money stress is widespread, and you think, you know, the economy is doing pretty well, but this is still stressing people out.
And you know what, too? I wonder with that, with the personal relationships, I wonder if you break a lot of them down, it doesn't come down to money also.
That would not surprise me. I think you probably are very much onto something, right? Especially when money is stressful for one person, it just seeps over, right?
Yeah.
Especially at this time of the year, you got to put the present buying and the traveling to go see people, and you're like, I spent all this money, I'm not even having fun. I mean, you know, it goes into a troubling area.
I might be relating to that this year, or I might know someone. Just saying. So, but your larger point in the story here is just, I mean, how damaging this can be to you physically and mentally.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing that people don't realize. Yeah, I'm stressed out about money. Oh, it's just stress. But, you know, there are multiple surveys and studies that show that money stress actually contributes to a whole host of health issues. A big one here is depression and anxiety. So people with greater financial stress have more symptoms of depression, more symptoms of anxiety than those who aren't. And it's, you know, it triggers sleeplessness, anxiety, depression, and that happens quite frequently when you're stressed out about money. A lot of people, I think it was 60% of workers who had money stress, that they also had anxiety, sleeplessness, and sometimes even depression.
Yeah. I must say, I may be alone or in the minority, but I create my own financial stress sometimes with the decisions I make. There's no doubt about it. So I look at the bill, I'm like, what the hell was I thinking? But I mean, I've created my own stress, and I admit it.
Well, this is the time of year that you're going to create your own financial stress, right? Because you're like, oh, this present, it's fine. I'm going to get this person something else. And then all of a sudden, right, I think something like 25% of people are still paying off their credit card debt from 2017 now. So from their holiday credit card debt. So we're talking about, you know, you buy a bunch of things with your credit card and you're like, oh, you know it's happening. It's stressing you out. You're still doing it. And you're probably still paying it out off a year later.
Right. We're speaking with Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch. She's got a piece about the number one reason and Americans are so stressed out, and it is not a surprise that it is money. I didn't realize, too, the stress here can be, or the financial stress can be tied to migraines.
Yeah, a big study. There's a certain genetic variation in this something called the clock gene, but about a third of people have this variation, and they get way more migraines in times of financial stress. So, yeah, I mean, these are things directly. They're looking at genetics, financial stress, how it all relates, and we're seeing, you know, more migraines.
Thanks, Katie. Katie Hill, editor at MarketWatch, based in New York. Paris has croissants, right? Belgium has waffles. And Rikers Island, the notorious prison in New York City, has carrot cake. It's the only dessert served on holidays, and it's made on site. Wall Street Journal reporter Corinne Ramey says understanding jail carrot cake requires understanding the outsized role of food behind bars. Food can incite riots. It can also keep peace. It is currency to be traded. Corey, set this up.
All right. So in the jail complex that's on Rikers Island in New York, you know, when you're in jail, you don't get a whole lot of dessert. But there is one dessert that these jails are famous for, and that's carrot cake. So that's what they had for Christmas dinner.
And why is that? Why carrot cake as opposed to, I don't know, any other kind of cake or pie?
Well, I think it started in the 30s or 40s. When, you know, like you're in jail, if you're going to give people in jail sort of a holiday treat, you don't bring in chocolate frosting or fancy cookies or anything that would cost more money to make. And so they had these ingredients in the kitchen, and they kind of just started making carrot cake. And it caught on, and it sort of became this iconic food at the jail.
But it's not a regular feature in their meals, right? It's only a couple of times a year?
Yeah, it's only for really special occasions. So that would be Thanksgiving and Christmas are the main ones. I think they also get it end of Ramadan and Mother's Day and Father's Day.
Wow. I think you said there's like 8,000 inmates there, right? So how much do they make or need to make for these occasions?
They do these big bakes right before Thanksgiving and right before Christmas. And it ends up being about 2,500 loaves, which is more than 62,000 slices of carrot cake.
And is it all gone, or do they give away leftovers? Do they make any extra for the community? Like, what do they do?
Well, I mean, they eat it, and it's very popular. But they will save a little bit in the freezer, and what it tends to get used for is when important people come to the jails for meetings. They have these sort of high-level meetings, like if you have the mayor come to the jails or other sort of visiting dignitaries. And then, you know, they put down like a paper plate on the table with slices of carrot cake. Like, that's sort of the catering.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Corey Ramey. Her piece is called "Who Serves the Best Holiday Carrot Cake?" Hint, it's a captive audience. How are the reviews?
Well, so I have to say, I have actually tried it. It's pretty good.
You spend how much time on Rikers? As a guest. See what
visitor,
I did there?
Just a visitor.
See what I did?
Yeah, that was cute. So it's good. If you're, you know, really into sort of the sweet, if you're imagining in your head like cake with
cream cheese frosting and that sort of thing. It's not that. It's almost like a banana bread type thing, but it's carrot cake.
Now, I know you mentioned in the story, like, sometimes food in a jail or a prison can be like a very powerful, you know, item or currency to be traded. Is the carrot cake treated that way?
It is. I mean, I think one thing that I have learned from covering prisons and jails is sort of just how important food is. I mean, food is important to all of us, and it's sort of very special for holidays, and it's special for, you know, it's this big part of relationships. But in jail, it's like one thing that sort of reminds you of the outside world and memories of the outside world, and it's sort of something you can still enjoy when there's a lot of things you're not enjoying in your life.
All right, thanks, Corey. Wall Street Journal reporter Corinne Ramey. One of the more uncomfortable situations around the holidays is receiving the same gift 2 years in a row, but that pales in comparison to what seniors on the Penn State football team will endure. When they arrive in Orlando for the Citrus Bowl, they'll once again receive a gift package from event organizers that includes a fossil watch. But Penn State seniors didn't merely receive a fossil watch last year when they played in the Fiesta Bowl. They also received fossil watches the year before when they played in the Rose Bowl, and the year before that when they played in the Tax Slayer Bowl. Gift bags are allowed under NCAA rules so long as the combined max value doesn't exceed $550. For players, the watches are typically customized with the bowl logo. 15 of the 40 bowl games this season are handing out gifts that include fossil watches. In the Citrus Bowl, by the way, Penn State's opponent will have no such risk of fossil fatigue. As the Wall Street Journal says, Kentucky has only received their watches 3 years in a row. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.